Welcome to The Art of Authenticity, a weekly podcast that explores what it really means to be authentic and build a life that's truly you, featuring in-depth interviews with successful business leaders, entrepreneurs, authors, and thinkers. By sharing their stories, daily practices, and habits, they will help you find a life that is successful and authentic. I'm your host, Laura Coe, author, entrepreneur, and coach. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show. Today we have David Chen. He is the co-founder and CEO of Strikingly, a Y Combinator-backed company that allows anyone to build a website in minutes. He also co-founded MoneyThink, an education nonprofit that spreads financial literacy to American youth. Are you thinking about making a change, perhaps leaving a high-paying job to follow your dreams? Then this episode's really for you. In this very personal interview, David shares his story where he left a high-paying job to follow his dream and the sacrifices he had to make to have a life that really felt authentic. He discusses his struggles in starting a company and the pressure it placed on his family life, even losing his relationship with his father. I really hope you enjoy today's show. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, write a review, and thanks so much for listening. Hey, David, how are you?
Great. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you so much for being on the show.
My honor.
David Chen is the founder and CEO of Strikingly, a Y Incubator-backed company that allows anyone to build a website in minutes. And I can attest to that because I love Strikingly. I have used Strikingly, and I literally think I'm one of your best salespeople. I tell people about it all the time. I just told somebody today, in fact, she asked me about my website on WordPress that I use because I have a very complicated site, but I use Strikingly as well. Anybody who's looking for a quick website, it's amazing. He also co-founded MoneyThink, an education nonprofit that spreads financial literacy to the American youth. MoneyThink was named the champion of change by the White House in 2013. David, thank you so much for being on here. I can't wait to talk to you about Strikingly. I have so many questions. First of all, how did you come up with this idea? It's just the most brilliant, simple, beautifully designed web offering out there.
Well, thank you very much, Laura, for the invitation. And hi, everyone. The kind of concept of Strikingly doesn't really just kind of pop out there when we first started working on it. Well, it's much more of an evolution instead of like, you know, just like one stop, that's it, we're going to go for it.
Yeah.
I guess that's actually, you know, most of the entrepreneurs sort of like experience something like this. When we first started, you know, our startup in a sense, back in 2010-ish, we actually was working on a completely different idea. It was not Strikingly at all. So Strikingly was the result of like the failure of our first startup and kind of like, you know, realizing that all of our assumptions for the first startup was completely wrong. Then we started kind of like evolving to this side project, which is Strikingly right now.
That's so funny. I feel like so many entrepreneurs experience that. They come out of the gate with their business plan, realize, and I so believe in that organic process up front where you struggle with it because it's amazing how the idea you're staring at isn't the great one, but the one next to it.
Right. I mean, the thing, there's a lot of things we learn. The hard ways, we learn a lot of those things, just like very, you know, very, very painful kind of experience. But at the same time, coming out of that, you realize a lot of things that you could not have learned if you just like kind of hit it on the first time. So, I mean, I had to let go of one of my best friends, and you know, I have to kind of like, you know, decide whether a startup is for me or not by the end of that. But all of those are great experience for me. And for Strikingly, it was really like, you know, after 9 months of development of the first idea, the first time we actually kind of like, you know, go out there and start talking to users. We're like, okay, we have been doing this for 9 months. This perfect thing that's in our mind. Let's get it all together before we roll anything out. And when we roll it out, it's just going to be awesome. People are going to like fight to get in the door and sign up. And we did that for 9 months. We rolled it out. In the end, we got something like 500 people signed up and nobody was really like crazy about it. And we're talking to users. We're talking to those like 500 people. And we asked them, like, the first idea was a crowdfunding idea. It was back in 2011. when I guess Kickstarter was just taking off around that time. So we're also on that trend. We kind of like started, you know, even before Kickstarter was like taking off. And I was really into this crowdfunding idea. And I started talking to people, those 500 users. And I asked them this idea, like this question of like, hey, how can we help you more with funding, right? I mean, very naturally, they're on a crowdfunding platform. And I want to see if there's anything more that we can do. Very interestingly, back then, nobody actually, you know, the answer I got from almost everyone was like, oh, I just don't need funding. I was like, what? You sign up on this, like, you know, crowdfunding website and you don't need that? Mm-hmm. How does that, you know, that doesn't work? And I asked them, I was like, well, okay, so what can we do to like improve your experience in general, right? Instead of like kind of asking a very niche question of how can we help you with funding? We asked them more of a general question of like, just how can we help you? And the answer from almost every one of the people I talked to was very surprising. They were like, oh, if you can just like improve the profile page of our, you know, project on your website, that would be fantastic. I was like, okay.
So they were just using the product to as a profile, and you were assuming they wanted it for this crowdfunding.
Yes, I mean, that was kind of our key selling point, but then I realized we spent a ton of time actually developing the entire crowdfunding experience, the commenting, the kind of like getting people involved, the funding part. It's just very complicated. If we knew that, we only have to like make the profile better. We'll have made a completely different product or something that's way better, I guess. Which is actually what happened to Strikingly, right? And I basically asked them, I was like, okay, can you actually just send me some profile pages that you think that's great? And I will see what we can do about it. And what I received from all of these people were all basically just websites. And I was like, okay, so you don't necessarily need just, you know, that kind of crowdfunding campaign, a place to host your project. You just want a branding or a place that you can call home for whatever you're doing. And that was very interesting. And I started realizing, wait a minute, back in college for MoneyThink, for student government, I was part of that group as well. And for almost anything I was working on, the one key problem that I always faced was that, how can I actually build a website? Just how do I do that? And I always went to this one person. He was actually the first CTO of MoneyThink. So we always went to this one friend of mine.
Who was right. Everybody desperately tries to find that one tech guy that isn't part of a company, because if he's part of a company, too much money, and you beg to get help with your site, right? It's terrible.
Yeah, exactly. So that was basically our experience as well. I mean, it was actually, you know, another person at MoneyThink, Shixin, he was the person who found this guy who right now is my co-founder. You know, we found Tang and we're like, okay, Tang, can you actually build a website? And I realized I did that so many times. And that was such a painful experience. I did that for MoneyThink's first site, the second site, and for student government's website, for my campaign website, for, you know, events, whatever. And just really painful because, you know, for me, I don't have any money to pay him. I just like, I don't want to pay you. And you're my friend, so don't ask me to pay you. They're like, oh, whatever. So at the end, basically, I have to like kind of like go to him every day after class, be like, hey, Tang, did you actually finish the site? When can you actually get done? That process lasts for like, you know, just many weeks. And then he finally get done. I want to make one edit. I need to chase him down again.
Right. Because you always have to make changes and then you're beholden to these people forever. And I talked to somebody today, literally, I'm at the incubator space at the University of Chicago, their new space for entrepreneurs. I hang out there. And she said, I love your website, you know, and I said, you got to go to Strikingly. Like that's what you want. You'll have a website in an hour. You really solved that problem.
Yeah, that was basically the premise that we started off, right? I mean, I knew my own problem the best. And also I knew that, you know, it was not a really great experience for the developers I work with. For them, it sucks for them to build a website that they don't really care about. Mm-hmm. And they can't really put in the commitment to do a long time. So for both of us, we felt the pain a lot. And we also saw that from our user base, which is also people who are just like us in college. They also face the same problem. from the first startup. So we're like, you know what? Let's just build something, right? I don't know whether it's a website. We actually didn't know what to call it. So we're like, you know, if we just build this one page format and then ask people, like allow people to change everything on that one page, that would probably just be able to solve a lot of people's problem, right? That was a premise that we had. So we started testing this out and we really embarked on the kind of a lean startup methodology now that I look back. And what we did was we just wrote out a landing page. You know, the landing page that you saw on Striking right now, basically.
Yeah.
We rolled that out within like less than 2 hours of development. We're like, you know what, let's just create an awesome landing page and let's roll it out. Yeah, 2 hours, literally 2 hours. And then we rolled out the landing page. We didn't even know how to describe it. So what we said on the landing page was literally, hey, sign up if you want to create something just like this. And we have no idea how to describe it. So we basically just rolled out, spam all of our Facebook friends and asked them to kind of like sign up, try out, share around. Within 1.5 weeks of development, of kind of just, you know, waiting, not really that much of active development at the time. With 1.5 weeks, we have about 800 people sign up to the platform with not a line of code.
Oh my God.
About Striking.
That's what you want though. That's genius. I mean, you just hit a chord with everybody because, you know, everybody wants that website really quickly. There's, you know, the woman today was a social media business of one person. So many people have individual businesses that are small starting up. They just don't have time or they're branding themselves. You know, like our mutual friend, Ted Gonder, I just want to put something up for myself. My partner uses it for her coaching business. It's just genius for that solution. But how did you find the design? Because I think the one page is, you know, it's great and it's simple, but I think the other thing that's compelling is that they're beautiful. So how did you, who did all your design work?
Well, it's the partner that I just mentioned, the one guy that we always go to as our webmaster. He's a genius. I just, you know, one of those people you just met in life, you're like, oh, he's smarter than me. He's one of those people. He's really smart. He picked up everything by himself, including design, including like development, including piano. I was just like, wow, that was awesome.
including piano.
Anyhow, I work with him. He's a great friend of mine. Very, 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 very smart person. And one thing that we both share in common is that we think the internet, well, around 2011, that's when we first kind of like wrote that landing page. This one page idea was taking off in a small scale, not like, you know, huge scale. Like
right,
today.
But it was the beginning of that trend. You guys were at the cutting edge of that.
Yeah, that was at the very beginning. And we saw this one page. I remember the name is something like Contrast Rebellion. And that was a really beautifully designed one page. And we have no idea the concept of a one page at all. We're just like, wow, this is beautiful. And we start talking about it. We're like, what makes it so beautiful, right? Like, what was the beauty aspect of it? There's many things. And now I can actually look at it with a more rational standpoint, which is like, one page is perfect for mobile. Mobile is taking off, right? Like, when you think about that experience of like you slide through a website instead of you have to click around and wait for the page to refresh. If I can just like, you know, browse it with my finger, kind of like slide it up and down, that was beautiful. And if I can take that experience to the web, that was just fantastic. And everyone started to kind of like enjoy that experience much more than using a mouse, a keyboard. That was just much more intuitive. So that was one part of it. The second part of it, the simplicity definitely cut into it, which is that, well, all of a sudden, when you think about one-page designs, that is all like linear logic, right? I don't have to think at all. You tell me to read the first page, and I just kind of scroll down and follow your logic. It's like reading a story.
Yeah.
So when you think about reading a book, you wouldn't just like, you know, you go to a book, you go to the, you know, the menu and check which chapter you want to read and then come back to that one particular chapter. And then after you finish, you go back to the menu. That's actually what a traditional multiple page website asks you to do, right? Like they have this menu on top and then you have to click around instead of like, okay, I have just all of this information lay out in a pitch format that you don't have to think. You just follow my logic.
I love that. I've never heard anybody explain it that way. That's such an incredibly cool view of it, right? I never thought of it that way, but it's true. It's like, this is my story and I want to roll it out in the way I want to roll it out. That makes so much sense.
Yeah. So that was why we thought that was beautiful and want to make it happen. And I mean, there's many reasons why you want to have multiple pages. And you know, basically presenting one particular reason is that you want to tailor your pitch to a particular group of audience. Like for MoneyThink, you probably want to have one page just for volunteers, another page for, you know, the donors, and another page for the partners.
Right.
That makes sense. But each one of those should actually just tell the story entirely in itself, instead of like you have to jump around. So that was why we loved one page, and that was just we didn't really think about this as clearly as I can articulate it today. But in the beginning, we sort of just like, wow, this is beautiful. We need to make it happen.
Where do you guys see this going? What are the next steps? So you were at the cutting edge of the one page and the design elements and the simplicity and personal branding was becoming such a big deal. What do you see coming down the pipe in this world, and how do you think about Strikingly?
With Strikingly, I mean, the understanding of where we can be has always evolved, and has kind of like, you know, sometimes our usage from, you know, what we see from our users outgrew us. At this point, we have big plans for what it's going to be. So, you know, in general, a big part of our user group are actually just entrepreneurs. We have seen that, like, just, you know, across the board. We have users from everywhere in the world, literally every single country. And from everywhere, entrepreneurs still is the biggest group of all of them. And so for Strikingly, we start to understand ourselves as not just, you know, a website builder. And much more of like, it's a way of like you starting your own business with literally like no overhead. You can start it within the next hour, like you mentioned.
It really is an hour. I can't say it enough times. Anybody listening, it takes an hour. Right. You can have a beautiful site. Sorry.
Yeah, right? So for us, we really want to empower people to just like do something they didn't think that they can before. Web technology is powerful. Like internet is, you know, I heard this from other successful entrepreneurs as well, which is, you know, internet is this just beautiful place for entrepreneurs. It's the most cost efficient way for you to start anything right now.
Yeah.
And the challenge has always been for average people, they can't really leverage the power of the internet to actually, you know, start something. It's a great distribution channel. It's a great way for you to, connect with your audience. It's a great way to, you know, make your audience become a super fan. Great way to build up your branding. But just that a lot of people can't do it. And we have seen ourselves being able to empower a lot of people to do it right now. And that's something that we're going to just continue down the line. There's many amazing stuff that we're working on right now that we want to roll out very quickly. But our goal right now is really, can we actually just empower anybody who wants to start a business, a startup, or just a store without an actual physical storefront very quickly? Can they actually do that with Strikingly with really within hours? And in the future, maybe within seconds, we have been taking it to like kind of like the minutes level, but within seconds, like can we actually push it further down the line of simplicity? That's something that we always think about. And I think we have some, you know, some pretty good idea of how to actually do that. So that's the next of Strikingly, I guess.
It's amazing. You know, I built a technology company in the 90s. We had teams of people to do anything. And it's just, it's incredible to see how far this has all come. And I can't wait to see what you guys do next.
Yeah.
And you also co-founded MoneyThink. What was your role in MoneyThink?
Well, I was actually one of the people who organized the events and kind of like just hustle to get all of the speakers on board. And had a very important responsibility I had back then was, raising money for MoneyThink, basically. Mm. In school, this is a great thing about UChicago. And I think, you know, across the board, like for many other schools, they have this very good support for people who want to do something to help the, you know, community around it. And for our school, we have, you know, very amazing support coming from the school. We can apply for funding from the school to actually help build up what we want to build up, to host events, to like recruit and to even, you know, reimburse our mentors kind of expense when they go out and teach people. And, you know, those are the things that, you know, the school provides. And I was responsible for actually just kind of getting that resources ready. So the Monday Team can actually, you know, grow as an organization, not just like, you know, us kind of bootstrapping it. So those are the responsibilities I have. But as you know, like in early stage, you pretty much do everything.
Yeah.
Like not everyone just basically hustle to do everything.
Yeah.
So I was also part of a mentor program, part of the, you know, the curriculum building, all of those. But, you know, my main job was still kind of doing the fundraising from the school part and also organizing the events. The pitch event, I organized two of them when I was there. So that was a lot of fun. And just like, that was kind of like the first lesson of entrepreneurship that I got from actually doing Money Things work.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they've both turned out to be incredibly successful companies. So David, you know, you're in your 20s. So, you know, looking from the outside, you really have what most people would consider a very successful life. And as I say in each of the podcasts, you know, this is really a podcast, though, about having success with authenticity. And my question to you is, with all this success, with, you know, being part of Early Stage Money Think, which has turned into having a national presence, and now strikingly this incredibly, you know, useful and valuable and desirable product for people with web design and hopefully, like you said, taking care of their entrepreneurial needs. But with all this success, how do you think about authenticity? What does an authentic life mean to you?
I think that actually, you know, covers most aspect of life. It's not just entrepreneurship. It's like how to take the personal relationship in the team. Also, like you have to balance your own kind of desire to like, you know, spend more time with your family, your girlfriend, with, you know, how you actually spend your time with the team. So I guess authenticity is a key word that I think about a lot. I always think about it. Ted and I, we talk about this a lot when we're in college as well. To start off, I guess, when we talk about this idea of startup, right? A lot of people right now is like, oh, I want to pursue a dream. Let's do a startup.
Yeah.
I can't equate those two things. I just like dream startup, that's not necessarily the same. A lot of people probably are not fitted for doing a startup, or startup is just not, you know, something. It's not like as of a dreamy thing that you, as you would think about. When we first started startup, we never thought of it as a startup. Our first crowdfunding idea, we actually thought about it as like, you know, kind of a nonprofit or social enterprise, much more than a technology startup. That's when we started it. And even until this day, you know, U Chicago is a very traditional kind of academic school. So startup was really like the misfit. You know, nobody was thinking about it. Right now they have an entrepreneurship program. And, you know, we have a career center that has somebody who's in charge of entrepreneurship right now. But back then in 2011, startup was like, are you crazy? Like, I remember I was in banking before. Actually, that was my route, basically. I was like, okay, I need to go down the financial route. I want to, you know, be a banker. I want to go to Wall Street. And that's what I thought I really wanted before. And I did. I actually went to, you know, one of the best banks. I was working at Goldman. And the moment I decided, you know what, I'm actually not fit, I told, you know, my parents and my school about it, they were just like, are you, what? Like, just do it for 2 years, right?
Are you crazy? Who walks away from Goldman, right?
Right, and that's basically from everyone. And my school was like, oh, they just don't understand. And my parents didn't understand either. So I remember there was one time my parents told me, it was like, oh, I've already, you know, put your acceptance letter in a frame and then like put on the wall. I was like, are you kidding me? Like that's that's how highly you think about me. And I remember when we first started startup, it was just an incredible amount of like, you know, barriers you have to overcome. You know, parents is one of the biggest ones. I remember I have to send an email to my father telling him, hey, don't protect me anymore. I know you don't want me to fail, but that was the particular thing I want to experience in life and stuff like that. I remember my co-founder was asking me like, oh, how do your father treat it? You know, did it work? Like, did he understand now? I was like, oh, well, he doesn't contact me anymore. So I guess
wow.
It worked.
Wow.
And then my co-founder, and it was really funny. My co-founder was like, you know what? Oh, wow, that's fantastic then. Send me the email. I'll send it to my father as well. And then his father ends up doesn't contact him either. So,
oh, my God. Oh, my God.
That was the beginning. I mean, it was different from what we thought.
I love the points you're making, though, kind of subtly is, you know, so many people say, oh, I'm starting I'm following my dreams and pursuing a startup or something. And that, you know, it's really a lot of struggle and it really required you to dig deep and challenging the views of your family, stepping out on your own. How did you manage your psychology and not cave and go back to Goldman? And I want to say too, for some people, Goldman is the dream, right? And I think it's really important. There's no right path. There's just the path for you. And that's what the idea of authenticity is really at its core.
Exactly.
So how did you have the resilience in those moments to stay with it?
I mean, yeah, great question. I mean, you brought up a very great point, which is, you know, for a lot of people, finance is just, that's the best place for them. I see a lot of this from my friends. I was like, I just don't think you should be doing a startup. I mean, even with all of this buzz, this like kind of hyped.
It's not for everybody. So many people think it's wonderful. It's a very specific life and it's, you know, it's for certain people. It's not better or worse. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. I don't think there's a way to put better or worse on anything. Right. And Goldman's a wonderful company. I loved it. I learned so much. I just like, you know, I will really highly encourage everyone to try out. But for me, I guess this just wasn't me. I remember I was at Goldman. So it started with like, this is a strong sense of like, I just don't belong there. I mean, whether I belong here is another question, but I just knew that I didn't belong to that world of finance. And I remember I was working at Goldman. Every single day, I would go back to the hotel. And I was like, hold on, why am I doing this? And I have to like, you know, spend 1 hour watching MTV to kind of like just brainwash myself before I was able to go to bed. And then every morning I would get up, I would be ironing my clothes. And I realized, I was like, why am I doing this? And that was a strong sense of like, I don't know where that came from. I guess that was just how I was built. But I wasn't really, you know, I just couldn't find the sense of purpose for myself when I was at that industry or that company. And that company was the best in that industry already. So I was just like, you know, I guess that wasn't for me. So
listened, right? Like, I think what's so meaningful there is that you had that sense that you didn't belong. And I think so many of us experience that at some point and we ignore it. We stuff it down, right? And that's where I came up with this idea of emotional obesity, but I did that. I just kept shoving that sensation down because I would justify it, right? I didn't feel like
that's the reality, right?
Yeah, well, I didn't think I belonged, but I felt so, there were so many reasons that I thought, well, this makes sense, you know? And it's just, you try to drown out your emotions with rationality.
Yeah, that's a great kind of a great way to put it. You know, the rational thinking process was really important in just basically a lot of things, but at some point, like, you know, the sense of finding your passion or I don't know, like whatever you put it, your passion, where you belong, so your sense of purpose, you know, when it comes to that point, you have to trust your gut feeling sometimes.
Yeah.
At a very personal level.
That's scary though, right?
It's very scary. Right. So,
I didn't have the nerve to do it till I was 35. So good for you.
Well, I guess, yeah. I guess I was just, you know, my parents still like think that I probably shouldn't do it until much later. But I guess that gut feeling was just so strong. Thanks to UChicago, thanks to like the friends I made there, we always challenge each other on that level. Ted and I would always challenge each other for almost every single decision that we made. So that was, you know, Ted, you know, he would do that.
But yes, he's
that
wonderful.
Was just a Yeah, that's a fantastic kind of way of, you know, of like the self-criticism and you kind of externalize that with a group of friends who criticize you all the time and you kind of realize what you really want and what you don't really want. I really appreciate that. So at that point, I realized I wasn't really fit for banking and we did our startup for the first time and failed, right? I mean, before StrikeMe, and StrikeMe wasn't really a straight path. So after the first startup, we kind of like just part ways, every one of us. There were five of us for the first startup, and two of them basically just left. One decided that, you know what, startup is not for me. I want to go to grad school. And that was great. You realize that, fantastic, early on. And the other person was like, okay, startup is not for me. I want to be a developer, but I just want to do development work. I don't want to really be part of this kind of like, you know, I have to take care of everything, doing a startup. That wasn't something for him. So he ended up basically going down the path of like, you know, becoming a developer, and he's an amazing developer. And the three of us who's, you know, who are still kind of left in the team, we decided, you know what, let's just put it on the side for a little bit of time. Let's do something. And I specifically remember kind of like we talked about it and we're like, you know what, let's just take a job and see how that works. Right? Maybe not finance, but let's do something else. Right? Every one of us go find whatever you want to do. And so the three of us, one of us kind of stay at school, you know, and finish up school. The other one went back to Hong Kong and pick up a job in development. And went back to Shanghai, basically soul searching. Kind of like, you know, joining a social enterprise incubator, and I was working here. But this one idea of striking just never died. And one of the very important aspects of this was that out of those 800 people that I mentioned who signed up to Strikingly, a lot of them still coming back to us, even though we didn't do anything for a long time. They just came back to us asking, hey, you know, can you actually create something? Like you know, when are you going to roll this out? Like, when can I actually try this out? I've been waiting for a long time. And that just like, you know, that gets us, right? And we're like, you know what? We made that promise and we care about this problem. So why don't we just, you know, put aside other things in our life after, you know, the day, let's just get on Skype and let's just like try to work on the side project and make it work, basically. So we get back together, we still try to make it work. And, you know, even though like the first two versions was completely like just nobody liked it, we still like, we can't let it go, basically. You have this strong sense of feeling, just you can't let it go. And I remember there were times that the three of us would be kind of like getting on Skype, and all we do was basically just doing other things, but the Skype was on. I hear like some typing on keyboards or like walking around on the other side of the Skype. But then that was a great feeling to have, which is like, oh, somebody else is on the other side, at least like with me on this, right? Not yeah. Myself against the world. So all of those just like kind of drove us to keep going, keep doing something, at least something, maybe a side project. I was almost convinced that I'm not fit for startup, not fit for this entrepreneurship thing. But then that just never go away.
Yeah.
So we decided, okay, you know what? Let's apply for Y Combinator for the first time. And we failed, actually. The first time we applied, we got to the interview round and we thought we got in. And we kind of like, oh, let's go celebrate. And then in the end, we realized we didn't. And that was the one moment that we realized, you know what, this is a time for us to, you know, kind of summarize what we feel and what we learn, and then make a decision whether to push on or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so the point that we got rejection was really the point that we realized what we really want to do.
I love that. I love that. I love that it's again like testing your authentic voice. How strong is it? Do you have the resilience in those difficult moments and, you know, that stir inside of you? You just kept turning towards it and accepting it as your truth. That's amazing.
Right. I mean, you can never really know or think it out. I mean, unless you are facing that challenge, kind of like, you know, in a real circumstance, you don't really know what will you decide, right? It's kind of like this classic question, which is like, oh, if your mom and your girlfriend or your wife fall into a river, who would you save? I'm like, come on, how do I know? I mean, I would prefer that doesn't happen. I mean,
right.
But that's the situation, right? Like before we got rejected by YC, we never really thought that we will get rejected. I mean, that's basically, I think this relentless positivity was really also something that, you know, some people just built for that. So whenever we talk about like, oh, what if we, you know, kind of like got rejected by YC? That wasn't even a question that just came up. And just like the three of us, we have this very interesting kind of, you know, agreement that we just don't mention that. Until that moment that we actually got rejected, we're like, okay, I guess we have to talk about it. And that's the moment that three of us kind of like just came forth with like, you know, basically what we really feel. And I remember one of my co-founders was like, you know what, the fact that we didn't get into YC make me want to do this more.
And that was
the moment I was like, yes, that's exactly what I think. And let's just do it. And we're in our 20s. What's to lose, right? Like, and just let's go for it.
Yeah.
Like, go for it. And we decided, you know, let's just quit our job. We start, and me and another co-founder, we just bought our one-way ticket to Silicon Valley. Actually, three of us, we all just bought our one-way ticket to Silicon Valley, and we started, you know, we kind of like, we found this like really small apartment. In the first 2 days, we stayed in this like one king-size bed in a motel. And we start kind of like finding apartments and stuff. But the one thing that we knew is that, you know what, now it's like, this is kind of like the moment of truth. We just need to, you know, push it forth and make sure that it works. There's nothing else at this point. We have already kind of put our foot down, and then this is our commitment. So there's no way back. And that's the moment that you realize, oh, this is actually something for me. And you make peace with it, right? And you'd be like, it sucks, right? I mean, back in the banking days, I can just go to ATM. I don't need to worry about how much money I can take out. I'm just like type whatever number. I know that I can take that out. That was a really interesting feeling. And now that with startup, I remember we have to cook ourselves. I have to cook for two guys. I never cook even for myself before. And I was like, I have to cook right now. And since we need to save money, we basically just like have one bowl of rice. You know, we cook a huge bowl of rice and then just like, hey, here's sriracha and go with it.
All right.
That's what we did.
You're a true entrepreneur, my friend. It's like, that is diehard commitment.
That was the beginning, basically.
You mentioned the idea that, you know, in college you had your friends that really pushed into you and I think fortified this idea of that authentic voice and making it stronger by challenging those opposing beliefs. What other daily practices or habits do you have in your life to keep this authentic voice, you know, strong and loud and center?
Reading is great. Kind of like just read through what other people have gone through. And basically people who are similar to you. There's a great book for entrepreneurs, The Hard Thing About Hard Things. Fantastic book by Ben Horowitz. That's a book, like when you start reading it, you start to kind of like, you know, project some of those to yourself. That was important. Yeah, I have this habit that I constantly kind of like take down things that I dislike about myself, right? And I kind of like self-criticize myself for, you know, why do I dislike myself that way? Am I just like that type of person, or what's the fundamentals? So there's like a strong sense of critical thinking towards myself. And we implement that for, and I always want to hang out with people who can actually do that. With the Money Thing, you know, crowd, with the Strikingly team right now, now we constantly challenge each other for whatever they say. And that's just amazing environment to put yourself in.
It's amazing because, you know, in the end of all the work and research I did going back to the ancients, and, you know, I found this incredible authentic life for myself at this point. But the biggest thing I realized in all of the readings from Eastern to Western philosophy and spiritual leaders of modern day or ancient times was this idea of the noise, the clutter, the stuff we say in our heads. And I call them imposter voices, right? It's the stuff that your voice in your own mind, it sounds like you, right? Like it, when you're thinking, it takes on your voice, your cadence, your tone.
Mm-hmm.
It would be fantastic if those voices that you've picked up through culture, friends, family, sounded like the place it originated from, because then we could distinguish and say, oh yeah, that's not me. That's not authentic. That's not mine. But it sounds like you. So it causes this mess in your mind. So I love this idea that you take and you write down the things you don't like, because often there are things we've picked up and we don't recognize it. And to have friends around you who can talk to you about it. And the thing I recommend most to my clients is, you know, to call out those voices, write them down, ask yourself exactly what you said. Is this true? Do I believe this? What do I want to do about this? How can I change it? Because often you're just spiraling on a thought or a negative point that I don't even think you've thought much about. I don't think you believe in.
Yeah, I mean, that was the writing it down was really when I think this is a practice that Ted and I, we both do. You know, back in the days when we were in college, we started kind of realizing that the moment that you start putting things down, you separate your thought from you,
yeah,
by yourself. And this way you can literally look at your thoughts, you know, and sort of like as a third party. And this way you can analyze it. A lot of times, I guess, a lot of my friends just say, oh, it's confusing, I don't know what to do. And then they stop thinking. And for us, that was never an option. And for me and Ted, I remember back in college, we're just like, you know, until we figure this out, until we kind of like get to a clarity, a sense of like, you know, just clarity about who we are, what we think, we can't stop asking those tough questions.
Yeah.
And you can't be like afraid of like, you know, facing the true self. Like, whatever it is, it's who you are. I mean, there's nothing bad or good about it, but the great thing is that after you know who you are, you can make very clear decision about what you want to do, what you don't want to do.
The problem is these people worry as I go into those voices, this self-critic, the negative self-talk gets so loud and the self-hatred can get so extreme that people avoid it. But I actually believe it's the opposite. It's what you said. When you write it down, it externalizes the thought and it no longer feels so personal and upsetting and hurtful.
Exactly.
You can actually handle it. And so it's just such an incredibly, you know, strong tool to externalize those thoughts. And it works beautifully. It's so simple.
Yeah, it's so simple, right? You just write it down.
Yeah.
People have
done
it for thousands of years, but that's what we realized as well.
David, I could talk to you all day. I love your product. I'm so grateful to have you on the show. If people want more, if they want to find out more, they can find you at strikingly.com. Is there any other information you want to give out at the moment?
Well, for sure. I mean, Twitter, you know, all of the social media is always publicly available. But there's a trick. You know, with Strikingly, we have this one thing that starting from the very early days, when you sign up to Strikingly, you will receive an email from me. And that's still the case after all of this time. And I actually do reply to those emails. So not that I just receive those emails and just never get back to them, but
you do reply because you replied to me before I knew you.
There you go. Right. So that's basically why I would recommend try out Strikingly. The first email that you receive is from me, and let me know what you think. I really want to hear everyone's thought.
Fantastic. Well, thank you. Thank you for creating such a great product. Thank you for chatting with me about authenticity. And my God, keep it up. If I could only have been in your place at 25, I don't know. I mean, it's endless possibility. I love it. And for anybody out there, if you're looking for more information, strikingly.com. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks so much for listening. I hope you found some value in this interview. If so, it would mean the world to me if you hit subscribe, completed an iTunes review, or shared it with a friend. Every little bit counts. I'm super grateful for every single one of you, and I couldn't be more excited to be here. Signing off, I'm Laura Koh, and I'll see you guys next week.